where we discuss how we can use sports and not let them use us. I'm JP Nerman, the founder of Thrive On Challenge, and the mission for this podcast is to connect leaders in athletics to help us create a transformational culture by building leadership and character. Now let's get started. You are listening to episode 58, the After Action Review, part 4 in our series on the book, The Culture Code.
Well, JP, this week we are going to continue our conversation about Daniel Coyle's second main principle for building culture, which is shared vulnerability. And the value in that, we talked about last week, of building trust among your team members. This week we're going to do a second part on vulnerability, which really is the idea that being vulnerable and creating a place for candid feedback and conversation creates an opportunity for information to be shared and improvement to happen. Now, one of the stories that Coyle talks about in his book is from the Navy SEALs and is actually a practice that we're going to really spend most of our time talking about today, which is the after action review. So when the Navy SEALs, SEAL Team 6, was preparing for the Osama bin Laden raid, one of the things that they did, which is a habit in their program, is to create simulations. So they built three models of the palace that Osama bin Laden was located in Nevada, in North Carolina, and one in Afghanistan. And for literally for months before the raid, they would run simulation after simulation, changing different variables, and then trying the raid again. So they would raid with a helicopter going down, or with bin Laden running away, or with there being more troops there than they thought, or whatever it might be. They would change all these variables, and then they'd run it through, right? And you would think the success of the mission was because they had so many practices to get ready for what actually happened in real life. And yet, Coyle really zeroes in on it wasn't necessarily just the repetition and the practice that allowed them to be successful in that raid and in many other missions certainly throughout their history. It's what happens after each practice, and that is the after-action review. All right, now imagine this. After every one of those simulations, the operators, they've just gone through these hot, sweaty conditions under incredible stress, in some cases even with live ammunition in their training. And as they come out of that practice, before they take a shower, before they clean up, the operators go into a room, they put their gear down, and they ask themselves three critical questions. What just happened in there? Why did it happen? And what can we do better to improve next time? Now, Coyle interviewed a number of Navy SEAL trainers, and all of them concluded that their success is due in large part to this AAR process, that this is the secret sauce that allows them to be one of the most elite teams in the world. Now, when I read through this as a basketball coach, I thought there's a lot of value in having a process like this that engages, in our case, your players, in providing some feedback that can help us to get better. And if I'm being honest with you and the audience here, I don't have a lot of experience doing that in a team context. And I know that you do, and what we're going to talk about a little bit today is how would you apply this AAR process to a sports team in order to be able to benefit as well from those questions: what just happened, why did it happen, and how can we do better next time?
So Nate, I love this strategy, this kind of behavioral strategy of the AAR and all the different things that it brings to a team, not just the Navy SEALs, but what it can bring to a sports team. The challenge is it looks different for everyone based upon their circumstances, and we're going to kind of get into that because, you know, you can implement this. And what is it, just after games? No, it's in things like in practice. It's in film sessions. It's in team meetings. It's done in small individual one-on-one meetings. It can be done in small groups. It can be done with your captains and or it can be done with your coaches. And I think, you know, doing it as a whole team is actually quite challenging. And so we're going to kind of talk about some of those things based upon some of my experiences, based on some of your experiences, how to best implement this within our team and within our context. And Nate, one of the biggest challenges, I think, to this, though, is it really challenges our model for communication. And, you know, it comes back to some of our first episodes there, is the way we're communicating. And I know the traditional model is after practices, after games, you know, it's almost like a ping pong with the coaching staff of them going back and forth on all the things that they saw and they observed and the things we got to do differently. And then maybe at the end, we'll be like, ask the captains, well, captains, do you got anything else to say? You know, like that's typically the traditional model that I observe with our coaches and the one that I've employed for years. And so it's really trying to change the way that we operate that kind of review process, because we already do have a after action review process. It just doesn't look anything like the Navy SEALs.
So one of my questions for you, JP, is you've implemented this with some of the teams that you work with. Ultimately, regardless of what it looks like, what is it that you want to get out of, or what do you want a team to get out of their experience in some kind of after action, after practice, after game type of review conversation?
So Nate, in our old way of doing things, at least my own old way of doing things, it was very much coach dominated after action review, right? We come in after a practice, we come in after a game, and it's, I'm going to say what happened, why it happened, this player didn't do that, or this player didn't do this. And then I would come in with, and you guys need to do this next time, and we're going to do this in practice because we're going to get this right. And it was very much calling them out. In this way, the Navy SEALs do it. I think it's fantastic because I think it's really about calling them up. And you're going to do four things when you do the kind of an after-action review like the Navy SEALs. The first thing you're going to do is you're going to create this shared vulnerability where people feel safe to fail. And because people feel safe to fail, they're going to be able to do the second thing, which is to take ownership. They're going to be able to step up and admit areas they can improve upon, areas where they kind of let themselves down, let the team down in. And so they're going to take that ownership, which is then going to lead them to the third thing, which is you're going to be empowering them. You're going to be empowering them not just to be communicators, not just to be leaders, not just to speak up and talk, but you're going to be empowering them to find a way, all right, to help them discover their own solutions to the problems, their own solutions to the challenges. And that's going to lead to them taking more and more ownership for it rather than you just telling them what they need to do. And there's one last piece here I think this is really critical, which is you're going to get more information, right? Like my experience from the sideline, my experience when I'm holding the whistle, all right, is vastly different than my experience as the player. How I perceive the way that I maybe have taught something or something that happened in the game is different than the player's experience. And there's something to be said for learning from the players and what they see out there, what they feel, and what they're thinking.
So JP, when I read this section of the book, I'd never honestly heard of an after action review process before. And I really like one of the goals that Coyle identifies that the SEALs really cling to is this idea that this conversation is intended to build what they call a shared mental model. He uses this quote here, a relentless willingness to see the truth and take ownership, right, of what just happened. They use a term called shared cognition, which actually Sam Walker talks about in the captain's class, and identifies, again, this idea that when teams are operating at their optimal levels, right, it's because they see things the same, they think the same about what they've seen, and they react the same to what they've seen. And anybody that coaches a team sport, you know, where players are reliant on one another for their efforts on the field, this is exactly what my dream would be for my team, is that they would be able to take the floor and see a defense, or to be able to try to guard somebody else by seeing the same thing, by thinking and reacting in the same way, so that they can operate the best as a unit together. And as I read through this, I think the challenge that really sticks with me is, in order to get to that place of shared cognition or a shared mental model for your players, you have to make space for them to be able to share what they saw with each other, right? To be able to share their perspective, what that experience was like in the game or in the practice or in the drill. And for me, we just haven't done that. We just haven't created that space intentionally for players to be able to do that. So I think the question, you know, is for coaches that don't have a lot of experience in this, that maybe see the value, is how does a high school coach of any sport, you know, or a youth coach or a college coach, where we're not working with athletes whose full-time job is to be a basketball player. You know, the SEALs, that is what they do. That's all that they do. And so they can take 90 minutes or 2 hours or whatever it takes after a simulation or after a mission to be able to walk it through. We don't have that kind of time. You know, I'm always sensitive to asking my players to do more. And I don't want to take another 15 minutes after every practice to be able to do this. So Let's talk a little bit about how would you implement something like this in a way that's practical, that's efficient, but is also effective for a sports team to be able to get value out of some kind of after practice, after game review process.
Started to implement something like this years ago, before I'd even read Culture Code. And I actually wrote an article about it called The Most Motivational Halftime Speech Ever. And so kind of going back to the old way of doing things, I often envision myself trying to be more like the Al Pacino in Any Given Sunday and his halftime fiery speech, you know, and that was motivational, right? That's what my team needed. You know, I'd try to pump them up. And I kind of recognized that that really didn't work, especially when you try to do it every game, right? It was not very effective. And so I started to change the way that we ran halftime. And the traditional model I would do was we'd walk to the locker room. I'd tell the players to get in the locker room and start talking. And that me and the coaches would talk. And so we would do that. And then, you know, me and the coaches would circle up. We'd talk about what went well, you know, what, you know, didn't go well. We'd try to. So we'd actually maybe have a little bit of an AAR ourselves there. But then I would come into the players and I would just start. I would go down a list of things, of the things that, you know, what happened, why it happened. And I would do it all that. And then the coaches might fill in the gaps. And that was it. And I tried to, I flipped the script. And it was, I was going to walk into that locker room. You know, I don't know if I always did this. Maybe I gave them a little bit of time, but typically I would get in that locker room. We would sit in a circle, right? There was not me in the middle of the circle. There wasn't me standing up. I'd sit on a stool in the circle with them, and they knew we were going to talk about what's going on out there. That's the question. What do we see? What do you see out there? What changes do you think we can make? And sometimes that process would get kind of, you know, tense. Sometimes that would be a real positive experience. But over time, you know, players, the first time we did that, they weren't great at it, Nate. I mean, it took time for them to be comfortable answering, to feel safe answering, like, well, I don't think that defense is working. Because at first they felt like by saying that they were criticizing me, right? And they were really getting on me, right? They were criticizing potentially one of my decisions. But when they saw me react well to that and embrace that feedback and actually honor and acknowledge some of those and makes and take on some of those changes, I think that it started to create that safe environment where they feel valued. And that's why I said it's the most motivational halftime speech ever, is because all of a sudden, you know, I tapped into this level, new level of intrinsic motivation. Also, I tapped in, like you said, to this whole new level of information that we leave out when we don't do this, right? When we just huddle together as coaches and then we'll try to make a decision without talking to the people that are out on the front lines here. Like, they're on the front lines, and getting their perspective really changed the way we did things.
I love that idea, just because it takes away the pressure of me trying to come up with 21 dramatic motivational pregame speeches. Exceptional post-game speeches. So if nothing else, I'm gonna steal that at least for a couple times this year. You know, when I think about things that are similar to this that I've experienced either in my own coaching or in working with other coaches, one that comes to mind is again, last year when I got to spend some time with Boomer Roberts at Trinity International men's basketball team, and at their annual retreat. So they start their preseason workouts. They go through about a week of practice, and then Boomer takes his squad, you know, kind of off campus, and they stay at this house for a couple of days, and they do all kinds of team building things together. But one of the most amazing things that I witnessed when I was there is they kind of have this tell the truth meeting. I don't remember exactly what they call it. I have to go back and look at my notes. But essentially, on the last night that they're together, they've been competing throughout the day in this decathlon. They've been making meals together. They've done interviews with each other. They've done skits where they kind of clown on each other a little bit. And so, you know, all this stuff that we've talked about with building connections has been happening for 2 days, and it sort of builds to this tell the truth meeting at the very end of the last night. And so imagine this, that there's like 18, you know, college basketball players crammed into this living room with four coaches on the staff. And essentially Boomer just opens up the conversation, and it goes like this: what needs to be said, who needs to be challenged, and who needs to be celebrated. And that's it. And so, you know, guys that have done this with him for 3 or 4 years kind of know what's going to happen. And a lot of times the older players will start first. But essentially, they're free to not necessarily call people out, but exactly what we're talking about here, to say what needs to be said, to share what we need to do better, and to really to acknowledge the things that they really value in each other. So it's kind of this amazing mixture of, you know, the players saying to the coaches, for example, one of the players said to one of the assistants, you need to be more vocal in practice because you have a lot of experience. You know what's going on. And too often you're just kind of standing behind Boomer and letting and Coach Boom do all the talking. And we want to hear from you. We want to learn from you, but you're just not vocal enough. And a couple of the other guys were like, yeah, Coach Noel, that's right. You know, we want to hear more from you, you know. And the rule is when you get celebrated or you get challenged, all you can do is say thank you. So you got to look them in the eye. You got to take it and you just say thank you. And then the next person can go. And this went for an hour and a half. You know, these guys were just back and forth, you know, one at a time. And it wasn't like they ganged up on somebody or anything, but really important things that needed to be said were said and things were brought out into the open. And it allowed them to go into their season then just, again, sharing perspective, sharing information, sharing ways that they can get better. And yet at the same time sharing that we're all in this together, that we want to be doing this with you. And here's how you can help us to be better and help me to figure out how I can help us to be better.
And Nate, one of the big challenges of doing that, I think many coaches are going, okay, that sounds great, but if I walk into my team and we get together and we say, you know, what needs to be said that we're not talking about, all right, like let's get into this type of stuff, the players would freeze up. And so something that I did with one coach that worked that now I've replicated with multiple programs is staging your AAR here, okay? And so this is kind of how you do it. You take, after a practice, right, you, before you get into that AAR, you pull two players aside, right? And you can obviously do different variations of this, but you know, most cases they're pulling two players aside, and one player is a leader on the team, right? They're vocal. You know, when we talk about status management, they, you know, players look up to them. The other player is maybe a newbie, like a freshman, and you encourage them, right, to point out something in practice that needs to be addressed, right? Something that didn't go well. And one of those at least needs to be something that you did as a coach. Something that, you know, you screwed up a drill, you know, the drill didn't go well, as they point out, well, you know, coach didn't, you know, explain that drill well, and so we were confused, and that's why it's, you know, we think we blew up, and if you next time you let us run through it, right, it'd go better. So you kind of talk to them about how to, you're coaching them up, right? So then you get to the AAR and in the locker room and you get everybody together and they're all circled around each other. And then you ask those questions, you know, what happened out there today in practice? You know, why did it happen? And how can we improve upon that? And these two players will stand up and they'll speak up to that. And at least one of those things, when they challenge you as the coach and you receive that feedback and you embrace it and you say, you know, you affirm them, thank you so much, that's what we need right now. By affirming them, all right, you're making it safe. And every time, almost every time a coach has done this, they don't even get to the second player before other people are jumping in. One player does it and instantly one or two other players are like, oh, okay. And before this, most programs will struggle. All right, they'll struggle to get people to speak up because they don't feel safe. So try staging an AAR if you feel players won't respond well, or if you've tried it before and it hasn't gone well and people aren't speaking up. Try staging it in a way that you're going to make it safe for people to speak up.
And I think another thing is we, you know, think about ways that we're going to try to implement this year is that it isn't necessarily we're looking for something that we can do every single day. You know, over the course of our season, we're going to play 20, 25 games. We're going to have 60 practices. I'm not sure that we're going to try to create time for 85 AARs as we go through the year. One of the things that's been really effective for us, if you're looking for baby steps into AARs, is what you're doing with your captains. You know, over the last few years, we've made it a habit that I meet with my captains every Saturday morning. We tend to have lifting or practice during the year, and so I'll meet with them for about 45 minutes before them. And essentially, without knowing this is kind of what we were doing, this is exactly what we were doing. We were asking them questions about how are things going, what do we need to do better, and do I need to coach differently, are there ways that I need to do practices different. We talk about the upcoming schedule, we talk about the team dynamics. You know, essentially, it's I'm trying to leverage them as a source of information, and as you said, in terms of empowering them to be able to help them come up with some of their own solutions when the team is struggling or when there's conflict on the team or what have you. I think my challenge now is, number one, how do I engage more players in that process other than just our three captains? And number two, is there a way to make it more frequent than just one meeting a week on a Saturday morning? Because I have seen the value in those conversations with my captains. I think that the thing that I'm trying to figure out, and probably a lot of coaches are wondering out there, is how do you engage more players to get more perspective and to get their input on how things can be done better? And again, you've got more experience with this than I do. Maybe you have some suggestions of ways that coaches can sort of take smaller steps into experimenting with some of these AAR type strategies.
Two big challenges coaches face when trying to implement this AAR is time, and also when we ask this question, what happened? Players just kind of freeze up. Well, we just practiced for 90 minutes. There's a lot of things that we could talk about that happened, that were great, that were bad. So one strategy to shorten the time of this AAR to make it something really, really quick, but also to help the players address a certain area or focus is to give them that focus before the practice, before the game, right? If you ha you know, a lot of coaches already have that emphasis of the practice or that emphasis of the game. Give that to the players, right? But then ask, at the end of that practice, ask them, how did we do in that certain area? You even better so, give them that area, that focus, and have a short before action review where they discuss what that looks like. So if you want your emphasis, you want to really be competing hard in every drill. Have them talk about what that would look like, what that's going to feel like. They're going to be exhausted, but they're going to be going out of it, right? Going at it, and at the end of that practice, but they're going to feel good, right? So have them talk about what that looks and feels like. And then after the practice, just ask your team on a scale of 1 to 10, or on a scale of 1 to 5, on a scale of 1 to 3, how hard did we compete today? That's just a simple review of that process, right? And then talk about, okay, so what are some things, why did you grade yourself on that? And then say, what are some things, or how can we compete harder next practice? How can we compete harder next game? Just simple little tools like that. Make that whole process something you can do in under 60 seconds.
JP, a couple of other challenges that I think about in terms of trying to implement some of this. One is, if you ask a kid or one of your players, well, what do you think? Like, my players hear that all the time. Like, I'm constantly walk up to them, well, what do you think? It's such a broad question, they're not even sure exactly how to answer. And yet, what you mentioned with the before practice conversation, if you can narrow some of that questioning, so maybe it isn't we're going to tackle a 90-minute practice or an entire basketball game. But maybe in a game, there was a point where the momentum shifted. There was a change in the momentum of the game. And maybe your after game conversation is simply what happened in that 1 minute stretch where the game got away from us. And so when you limit that scope and you frame the conversation a little bit more narrow, it's a little bit easier, I think, for players to focus and maybe to connect rather than just saying, walking in the locker room after a game and saying, "What happened out there?" Like, that's so broad. Like, as you said, the game is 32 minutes long or whatever, 90 minutes in a soccer game. Narrowing the scope might help your players to engage conversations more willingly.
So there's great value in having some consistent structure, and this could look like posting three questions on your locker room wall that they know every halftime you're going to be asking them, or they're going to be asking each other. Another way, that I've been doing with a team that I've been working with locally here, Nate, is over the course of about 4 or 5 practices, or open gyms, just simple, short open gyms that are like 60 minutes long, I've been consistent about this, a 60-second before practice review. And then I've been consistent at the end of that open gym, that practice, of doing a little quick review with them as well. And we've only really been focusing on kind of two common core values: competitiveness and listening. Just those two things. And they've been evaluating themselves on a scale of 1 to 3. One day we talked about what great listening looks like, what's unacceptable listening, what's acceptable listening. And by doing that, I can do these little reviews in under 60 seconds because we have that common language, we have that consistent structure. And it doesn't have to be this whole, let's break it down every time, of all the little things that we didn't do that we should have been doing out there. But they can quickly identify where, what level they're at, and the things, and they can make suggestions for improving for the next open gym or practice.
So JP, I think one of the consistent themes in what we've talked about today is that However you decide to structure this, however you decide to tiptoe into this idea of creating more conversations and being more intentional about this review process with your teams, I think we can both agree that it has to be coached. I mean, you have to coach your players to an extent of what you're doing and why you're doing it and what the value is. And as I look ahead, you know, we're getting ready to start our basketball season here in another month, and we're brainstorming ideas of ways that we can implement this. But the two things that we're going to really try to leverage this year are, one is our film sessions. So last year, we would watch some of our own film, but it was really what you described before of me just saying, you know, this is, we turn the ball over and here's why this play didn't work and here's why. Like, it was more of a presentation than it was an interaction. And so this year, I'm really excited about reshaping our room. So players are seated in a circle, you know, facing the screen, and trying to prompt them with questions about, you know, what did you see here? Why did you make this decision? How could we do this better? And rather than do some marathon 30-minute film session presentation from me, that we may just pick five possessions in our previous game and just talk through them, what everybody saw, in hopes that they become more comfortable having those conversations during practice or during games. And that's the second piece here, as we teach this and as we are intentional about coaching how this is done. You know, we play games in our practice, like we talked about with Brian McCormick, where we'll play a competitive five-on-five with a third team of five sitting out, right? And so we really want to encourage our players that are out to really leverage that time where for 15 seconds or 20 seconds, they can just share what happened in the previous possessions or when they were in the drill, and get comfortable with, it doesn't have to be led by me, it doesn't have to be facilitated by a coach, but that they can get into the habit of sharing information and sharing perspective with each other, so that the next time they're in the drill in another 10 or 15 seconds, they can do better, right? They can react similarly. They can understand how they are thinking about the same problem that needs to be solved on the floor. And so for us, we may not get to the point of sitting down as an entire team and talking through a practice or a game, but we're just trying to find little steps to be able to increase the amount of sharing from player to player and player to coach, so that we can get better during the course of the season.
Yeah, Nate, I think the big thing is, just like we talked about in Brian McCormick's podcast about the competitive cauldron, is this is a strategy. Everyone's context is different. My advice is just start simple. It's not going to be perfect right off the bat. It's a skill to be developed to be able to run this after action review. And so it's going to take time. It's not going to be perfect right away. Now, my encouragement would be for all the coaches listening to this podcast, that if you want to discuss, you know, this idea, this strategy, or any other strategies we've been throwing out here, to not hesitate in shooting me or Nate an email. Our information is in the podcast for this episode. We'd love to hear from you. We'd love your questions, or even just some of your ideas as well.